This is the College Football Inquirer. North Carolina placed its general manager on administrative leave on Monday, and it was the biggest story in college football. We will explain why. Plus, a congressional update from Ross Dellinger and Stanford football players trying to unionize. Also, Big Ten Media Day starts on Tuesday. What questions do we have for Lincoln Riley, for Luke Fickell, for Ryan Day, for Kyle Whittingham? It's going to be a big year in the Big Ten. We're talking about it all today on College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Stephen Godfrey and Ross Dellinger. I am Andy Staples. And gentlemen, we need to explain why the placing of a GM on administrative leave with pay by North Carolina blew up into one of the biggest stories of the college football offseason. Guys, I just screenshotted an email and tweeted it out.
Okay.
And as of right now, 2.6 million people have looked at the Michael Lombardi is on administrative leave tweet. Why is this such a big thing?
He's a little bit of a polarizing figure. Yeah.
Where to start? We were talking before we went on air, just kind of comparing notes, and I made the mention. I think Andy, you're close to the sentiment. You ask around about people in our sport, and you get feedback about people in our sport. That's kind of what we do. Michael Lombardi hasn't been in college sports all that long, right? Like a year and change, basically. And at least for me, he's running a 0.00%. That's a decent human being recommendation rating. In other words, every single person I talk to, and I'm not talking about just media people. I'm talking about coaches, other people in the industry.
Agents.
Yeah. Literally any human being that is cognizant of the world around them. He's not a good person. I know people kind of bristle when I say stuff like this, but when you have a 0% recommendation rating, like he might not be a functional human being capable of empathy. He's condescending. He's elitist. He's a bit of a bully. He's disrespectful. He doesn't value your time. I think there's a heavy level, Andy, this morning and yesterday, of schadenfreude, of people very, very satisfied. Because this is also the same person, Andy, who said, hey, we're going to be the 33rd NFL franchise. Guys, I don't know if the 33rd NFL franchise is going to make the playoffs this season.
Which, by the way, he stole from Jed Fish at Washington. Jed was advertising that
at Washington. Yeah, and how many people care if Jed Fish say that? Why? Because Jed Fish, some other human beings might
people
say,
like
functional human being, right?
Likeable guy.
That's how it works.
Likeable guy. That's right. That's right.
They've completely bombed to this point, right? Jed Fish, Washington. Yeah. Pretty good, right?
We haven't mentioned the other reason I think this is such a big deal is obviously Bill Belichick is this man's boss.
Oh, that guy.
This man's employer. The guy who brought him in, the guy who paid him $1.5 million to be the GM. And I think, I don't know, you guys tell me. I feel like there's a little bit of respect the game going on here.
Okay.
And we talked about this last year. From other coaches, from other people in the college football space who are pretty gleeful that these guys, Bill Belichick and Michael Lombardi, thought this was going to be easy, and it has proven to be incredibly difficult for them.
Yeah, it's when you think about what college sports, college football entails, especially in the recruiting landscape, I don't know why they thought that way. Right, like I don't know why they thought it would be easier. Most people in college, most coaches in college, you know, Godfrey talks to a lot of them. Like they'll say, like this is way harder. It's the year-round BS with the recruiting and all this stuff. Like I don't know why they thought it would be easier in any kind of way. I was asking somebody in the NFL about Michael Lombardi, and I said, "Man, you know, have you seen the reaction to the news? Everybody seems to be celebrating, and is that what his reputation?" Is in the NFL too? Was he like roundly sort of hated, you might say?
Yes.
And they said, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. His reputation was about the same on the pro level. So I don't get why they hired him, except that he is Bill Belichick's guy
for whatever reason.
Goon.
Ross,
goon.
Here's the fun part. Goon. First off, shout out. Hey, shout out to a Monday morning news dump. When you hate somebody, when you hate somebody, you drop their personnel information on a Monday morning and not a Friday afternoon. Shout out to North Carolina.
Kick off the week. Yeah.
Damn right. So one, thank you, North Carolina. We appreciate that. Two, I had a fun moment yesterday, as we all did, where I had NFL people and then NFL media, like people who work in the NFL and then people who cover the NFL. They were asking me like, hey, do you know what's going on yet? I was like, oh, no, what do you think? And they all said, well, he's more of a prick than he is a perv. So it's probably something like that. And then all the college people I was talking to, I think we have more pervs in college these days where we just have more HR type scandals, right? They were all betting it was an HR thing. Here's the fun part. Guess what? We might all be right because we have an HR complaint and we also have a CSC investigation.
So the HR complaint reported by The Athletic, the CSC investigation reported by Pablo Torre. Basically, what I was told yesterday morning, and it jives with everything we've seen from the other folks, is that there's not one overarching giant smoking gun, oh my God, can you believe this happened?
Mm-hmm.
That it's more, this thing happened from a compliance standpoint. This thing happened from an HR standpoint. So
it's so much funnier. They're just tired of him. It wasn't even one thing.
Let's recall. North Carolina is in the midst of a transition. Bubba Cunningham was the athletic director of North Carolina. He is shifting into an emeritus role. Steve Newmark, who came from NASCAR, is the new athletic director there. And Steve Newmark's job is to make sure this thing runs smoothly for years to come. This looks to me like new guy planting his flag saying, I know we gave you a bunch of money, Bill Belichick, but we're going to start unwinding this thing because this may have been a mistake.
Yes, they should be done, I think, by this time next year completely. I mean, I think this is the first job you put on the board right now, right? I mean, if Lombardi's – first off, let me acknowledge, I don't think there's a way Lombardi comes back from this. And I think without Lombardi, Belichick is even more vulnerable and disinterested.
Based on what we saw last year, based on the roster they put on the field last year, Lombardi was objectively very bad at the job.
Yeah, the way that you actually solve this, Andy, is you go and you – and by the way, none of what I'm saying is going to happen. I'm just telling you what to do. The way you solve this is you go out and you try and push aggressively to hire a young, dynamite college GM who understands the market to where you're not competing with, like, the bottom end of the American.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes, sir.
Or maybe they use Patrick Suttis, who was already there.
They're not going to do that.
They've been doing this for years.
They're not going to do that. What they're going to do is that Belichick is now going to basically go into a defensive posture inside that building, right? They're going to double down, and it's going to be us versus them until the administration eventually pulls the trigger, which, if you look at that schedule, might be before Halloween, people.
I just know that there's been a lot of people reaching out to East Tennessee State coach Will Healy.
Yeah.
Saying you could be the one, you could put the stake in the heart
as the internet says, Will Healy has a chance to do the funniest thing ever.
Yeah. So, but the thing is that there is very little confidence that Michael Lombardi did his job well this past offseason either.
Yeah. Yes.
The thought is the roster is going to be fairly similar, that they again were not competing with the types of schools you would need to compete with to put a really competitive product on the field in the transfer portal. And the official apology from UNC, or the official, you know, excuses from UNC are, oh, we want this to be a developmental program. We want this to be a place where people can come and learn from Coach Belichick. Yeah, well, they also have recruited out of high school well enough to pull that off too.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, there are people who believe this stuff, and I feel bad for them. But in college football in the year of our Lord 2026, if you had a bad year last year, you can have a really good year this year as long as you spend some money and choose the players wisely.
Right.
It's not that complicated.
Yeah, but they're definitely going to have another bad year this year. I want to be clear about that. Okay, take that to the bank. And then you're going to have an opening where this remains, guys, maybe the quintessential on-paper job in all of college football. I have talked about the potential at North Carolina for as long as I have been in college football media. I know, Andy, you have as well. Ross, like, this is one of those where people say, oh, well, you got the Jordan brand, and you know, there's so much talent in the state and kids identify, da, da, da. I have heard this song and dance for over 20 years. And now you are left with one of the most embarrassing chapters. I caught hell during the talks to hire him when they blew past John Summerall and everybody was the smartest guy in the room.
They didn't blow past John Summerall.
They turned him down.
I checked in and got a little more, well, but there's layers to it. So I checked in and got a little update on that.
Okay.
Or just a clarification on how all that went down. Mm-hmm. And basically, Bubba Cunningham was the AD at the time. Newmark had not been hired yet. He was running a fairly conventional coaching search.
Mm-hmm.
Reached out to Matt Campbell, but Matt Campbell wasn't talking to anybody till after that season.
Yeah.
But they end up focusing on John Summerall.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there were meetings that went well.
Yes.
And then John Summerall and his team got wind.
Yes.
That there was a parallel search going on,
yes,
run by the board chair who had talked to Bill Belichick multiple times. And wisely, John Summerall said, you know what?
Yeah.
I don't want anything to do with this.
Yeah, Tulane's actually a pretty good job right now. And that was absolutely the right move. So, yes, I heard the same thing, talked to probably the same people. Technically, but Andy, the point remains. You had John Summerall. And also, I want to go back and look at that.
Like, if there hadn't been a parallel search, he probably would have taken the job.
And think about how much of a low tide that market was, right? There were no SEC jobs open. This was, you had...
That was the best job.
You kind of had the entirety of college football to shop from, at least of the available candidates that were going to go to a promising ACC program. But you had the best young talent interested. You had other coaches like... I mean, I'll throw a name out there, like PJ Fleck wanted to go to North Carolina. Like there were coaches who were pushing and expressing interest, and yet this is the decision you made. It will go down as maybe the worst coaching hiring decision of the last decade, if not longer, in college football.
But again, I have a hard time. Well, I can criticize it now, knowing what we've seen from Bill Belichick. But if we go back in time, it's freaking Bill Belichick.
Nope. Nope, no sir.
No,
no sir. No sir.
No.
0.0%. Hey, do you know what his defense was ranked his last year in the league?
I was too busy watching Matt Patricia coordinate the offense.
Guy, that's my point, Andy. That's my point. You got a guy who could not even get a sniff for the Atlanta Falcons. Like they passed him over for Raheem Morris. He was not even getting interviews at that point for NFL head coaching jobs. He was damaged goods. There's a great New Yorker article of all the outlets on how this came together and the amount of idiot politicians and boosters involved. This was a bad sale. Well, it was an effective sales job. I can't say it was a bad sales job. This was stupid from the jump. Nothing about Bill Belichick correlated with the state of college football, what you need to be successful, how you win, talent evaluation. None of it, Andy. We've already talked about this for like 100 segments.
And the thing is, like, yes, if they talked about their plan in a way that resembled what they've actually done, then you should have run away screaming.
But
if they gave the impression that they thought this was going to be easy, which from talking to people around the NFL, that was the impression they gave when they were researching the idea of moving to college, you should have run away screaming.
Andy, John Summerall got hired a couple months ago at Florida. It didn't take long for people around Gainesville to say, oh, this guy knows what he's doing. Talent evaluation, high school recruiting, portal, et cetera. Think about how much time we've had since Bill Belichick was hired.
Well,
there has been zero. There has been zero.
Well, here's a great proof of concept. Yeah, great example of it. John Summerall gets hired at Florida. First thing he does is go hire Buster Faulkner away from Georgia Tech as the offensive coordinator.
The most sought after OC followed him. That tells you something, right?
Yeah. What did Bill Belichick do for that very position? He retained Freddie Kitchens.
Yeah.
And has since fired him.
And then put his son as DC. And they were decent towards the back end.
They were fine on defense. Bobby Petrino, now the offensive coordinator, and it's interesting, you mentioned Godfrey before the show. Like Bobby Petrino and Michael Lombardi, probably two guys that, from a personality standpoint, if you talk to everybody around the game, you get that's the vibe you get. The difference is Bobby Petrino, a long track record of being very good at calling offensive plays.
Yeah,
as
I mean,
opposed to Michael Lombardi's track record of
He's probably going to be the interim head coach at North Carolina. Look, this was a total system failure. You could have had John Summerall and Darian Mensah for at least 2 to 3 years. You could have completely changed the perception of this brand. You thought you were the smartest people in the room when in actuality, everything told us you were the least informed about college football. They made a horrific decision that everyone at every level who we all know and respect said, don't do it. Then they tripled down. Then his girlfriend, Red 8, ran an entire comms campaign that destroyed the entire mythos of the man who won the most Super Bowls. This is a total abject failure and a sullying of one of the biggest names in NFL history. And it's the dumbest thing I've seen in a decade. They deserve everything they're about to get and more.
In the conference realignment like situation, right? And North Carolina's always talked about as like the top. This like, it certainly impacts their brand when they're bad at football and they have an embarrassment of a coach and girlfriend situation. So it didn't. It was not good for that either.
Here's my thing on that.
Closer to 2030.
If you pull the ripcord on this thing this year, which if they're bad, I would assume they will. I don't think you're that harmed by it from the going forward realignment standpoint, because North Carolina is in the fortunate position of being one of the places that the SEC and the Big Ten would fight over.
I think they're still the number one on the board.
Part of whatever is next.
They have
the comfort of knowing that.
I think they're still number one on the board. You can stop me if I'm being too hyperbolic. I put them over Notre Dame because I don't see a world in which Notre Dame would ever actually consider something like the SEC, right? Like North Carolina is an equal, it's a public institution. It sits right in sort of the territorial border. It's
a great school.
It's a great public university.
It's always wanted into.
Yeah.
Longtime Big Ten commissioner, Jim Delaney, who's still advising the Big Ten, by the way, North Carolina grad, played basketball there.
Damage that will carry over. Because look, it happens. We all have our white trash moments. I say that. I come from white trash. And you've had your white trash moment. You've had adult cheerleading competitions, beach photos. You've had a woman screaming at CBS News. Like all of these things have happened. And your brand is sullied temporarily. The only actual damage that you will create at North Carolina is if you do not take every single person that bull rushed this hire through and hermetically seal them and prevent them from ever having influence on a major coaching hire again. The problem is there's a cultural inbreeding at these places, and I don't know if that's going to happen. I think some of the same dumbasses are going to be pulling the trigger on the next hire.
I think what we saw yesterday is probably the new guy in charge trying to establish that, hey, I'm going to run this.
I hope so, because we also know this, Andy. Bubba Cunningham he's still on this earth, a good athletic director who had a good understanding of the market and knew what was best for North Carolina athletics.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to watch this because, again, there's not a lot of optimism about this year. This is a team that 4-8 last year, did not appreciably make its roster better, and plays a more difficult schedule than it played last year. So
yes,
there's that. But it's so interesting because like North Carolina has not moved the needle at all. Like when you hire Bill Belichick, you think it's going to move the needle. You're going to be in the headlines all the time. They've only been in the headlines for bad things. He's not done anything to attempt to generate excitement about North Carolina football. Like
that's another reason
doesn't
why
he understand the concept of salesmanship in college football at all.
That's another reason why he's never been hired, is because he doesn't buy into the sort of building blocks of how you establish a dominant program. And like, let's be honest, younger coaches or the guys who are at the top of the game right now, even Kirby's kind of considered a stalwart now, right? Like he's one of our elder statesmen. Kirby understands the hype. He'll land at a high school game in a helicopter. Bill Belichick was never going to do any of these things. And his solution to personnel was Michael freaking Lombardi.
Yeah. Yep. And that's why this is a Belichick story that is exacerbated by Lombardi's reputation.
I think they're tethered together, and I don't know if there's a way out. I mean, look, we can game this out for a second if you want to, Andy. Sure. I just don't know I'll take away my personal opinion of the situation. Let's just talk ball for a second.
Okay. Yeah.
With that schedule, I don't know how, even with lucky breaks, they're going to get past 6 or 7 wins. And then what you have
And you fired Mac Brown for going 6-6.
Right. So let's say for whatever reason, he miraculously pulls off 6-7 wins and Petrino's at his like peak 2010 level of offensive play calling. Then you have to sit down with Bill and say, we've got to get a new GM. We've got to modernize or college footballize your personnel operations. Belichick is most famous in the latter part of his NFL career for refusing to adapt and refusing to collaborate with outside input, specifically in personnel. Like we talked about this, Andy, where he thinks he's outsmarting everybody by finding the diamond in the rough 2-star when he should just be trying to bag 4- and 5-star players.
Yeah.
So
it's, it's one thing we talked about on my other show, like, what is a 5th-round draft pick? It's a guy who is a really good college football player who probably was a big-time recruit.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you're not, like, what he did in the NFL, even when the times were good in the NFL, when he was at his best from a personnel standpoint, he was picking from a much smaller pool of guys we know are good enough to play.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's got to go from this giant pool. And I'm not sure he can recognize who is above the line and who's not.
So we're recording this on July 28th. I'll go ahead and get the cycle started, boys, so the agents can thank us later. Arthur Smith is in college this year. He is a UNC alumnus. I have the privilege of having watched every single game that Arthur Smith has ever been a head coach of. I do think...
Also, his daddy has a good job that, if you need some...
Ooh, he does not. Bro, he does not like to talk about that. Trust me,
I'm just saying.
I think
Arthur Smith's the son of Fred Smith, the CEO.
Fred Smith, yeah. If you've ever even been near Memphis, Tennessee, you just say the Smiths. I will be very interested to watch Ohio State's offense this year. Brian Hartline, right? He benefited from the Ohio State offense, got the USF job, right? I'm going to be fascinated to see how it adapts. I've made some kind of snide jokes about, like, get ready, backup tight end number 3 for Ohio State. But I do think they'll be versatile, and I do think there are obvious candidates out there for UNC. But, guys, there always have been obvious candidates out there for UNC. It doesn't have to be this bad. Y'all just seem hellbound to make it so.
Well, they got to get through this part. Week 0, they play TCU in Dublin. It begins. Who knows? Maybe Belichick will work a miracle.
Sonny Dykes.
Maybe we've he'll all snap his fingers and decide he cares.
We have all talked to Sonny. Andy, we have all talked to Sonny Dykes. All of us have talked to Sonny Dykes before. I'm going to go ahead and guess. I know a lot of people at TCU are listening. I know people at TCU listen to the show. They are going to enjoy table setting the narrative. Okay. And what I mean by that is they are going to try, like, remember Sonny Dykes was on the negative receiving end of the Deion Sanders hype train because that was the debut Correct. Game. Sonny Dykes and TCU are going to see if they can't hang 70 in Ireland. I feel pretty confident in that prediction.
We shall see. TCU starting Harvard transfer Jaden Craig at quarterback. So it'll be fun. Fun to watch a new football season take shape not long from now, like 1 month from now. But before that, there's a lot of action off the field. Still action on Capitol Hill. When we come back, a congressional update from our own Ross Dellinger. We're back to College Football Inquirer, and the news late last week from Capitol Hill was not promising for the Protect College Sports Act because John Thune, the Senate Majority Leader from South Dakota, go Jackrabbits, said that he did not foresee that particular bill getting to the Senate floor for a vote. Since then, he has backtracked a little bit. And Ross, what is going on the Hill that has caused him to say, no, wait, maybe it's still got a chance?
Yeah, you know, I think, sorry, it was to our listeners who a little quiet the first segment because as of 8:30 Central on Tuesday morning, there's just like active, you know, negotiations going on and I'm getting updates kind of routinely, maybe too routinely about it. and so last week, I think we said on the pod maybe that, you know, take John Thune's comments with sort of a grain of salt a little bit. You know, they were a little bit overstated and overplayed. because I don't know that he was read into some of the intense negotiations that were going on the day that he said that. And now we see, right, he's, as you mentioned, Andy, he's sort of backtracking a little bit because there has been some pretty intense negotiations the last like 5 to 7 days to satisfy the SEC and Big Ten with revisions. So in update, the SEC and Big Ten on Monday received the summary of the revisions of the Protect College Sports Act as lawmakers tried to appease them to get their support and bring the bill to the floor next week before a month-long break for lawmakers go for a month-long recess. However, as of 8:30, they haven't received the full text of revisions, the actual revised bill text. And that's what they're waiting on in order to make some kind of decision on a position. The SEC presidents reviewed the summary on Monday night, but they want to see the full text. So that's kind of like what we're sort of waiting on. Is everybody happy with the summary? Not completely, but happier than maybe they've been, I guess.
And I'll timestamp this. We are recording this a couple of hours before Tony Petitti takes the stage at Big Ten Media Days. So obviously how they feel about it is very important too.
It is. And that's going to be an interesting on timing. By the time you listen to this, you know, there are a lot of things may have changed, but the Big Ten is, first of all, for the Big Ten and SEC to change their position on the bill and support it potentially. You know, I think that they have to get the presidents together, right, and get a president's meeting and then change their position from their presidential level. The Big Ten's not going to be able to do that like on the fly today because it's media day. And Petitti, the commissioner, has things back to back to back to back to back. So it's not going to happen to this evening. And by that time, is it going to be too late for the Senate to file for what they call cloture to get the bill to the floor next week? So it's just a really tight timeline. I don't know if it's going to be able to get done, but certainly lawmaker staffs are working to try to appease some of these things that the SEC and Big Ten want.
So what specifically, Ross, are they doing to appease?
Well, the biggest change.
Some
of the most the most noteworthy change for like the average listener and football fan, right, is this new retention pool we talked about last week. So you have the $21.3 million, each school has $21.3 million of rev share pool to spend on their athletes. The bill creates a retention pool to be used only on retaining players. At first, it was supposed to be a $25 million retention pool. It's been dropped, according to the summary, to $20 million. So now you have $21 million, you have $20 million. Then you have a new thing, an extra $5 million to be spent only on women. So only women athletes can get this other $5 million. So the total cap is now at like $46 million, basically is what we're talking about. So that's kind of like one of the new big additions, I guess, to the bill that the SEC and Big Ten wanted because the bill's supposed to have a stricter cap and the new rev share number will like meet more of the market where the market's at right now.
Can athletes still sue though? Because that was one of their.
That's a big question. I think that
legally taking
literally
away
as we're taping, I'm getting text on the SEC and Big Ten's response to the summary. I haven't even read it yet, but I believe that you're going to see what's in there is we still believe that athletes can have a path to sue us. And so we need more liability protection. That's a big deal, is that they want more protection, more broad liability protection. And they don't believe they get that from the summary. Are they going to get that in the bill? Again, they haven't seen the revised text yet in the bill.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You finish up because I'm just going to yell.
Okay. All right. One more question. Where does the conference expansion, those clauses that were so controversial when the bill came out, where does that stand?
Yeah, we believe that it still stands as what it was last week, which is a cap on 19 schools per conference. Mm-hmm. And if you move within the power leagues, like say the ACC school moving to the Big Ten or SEC, you have to operate as an independent for 5 years. Mm. Keep in mind, most people in college athletics think that's kind of absurd of a concept, and that the lawmakers shouldn't be getting involved in that. So if this bill does pass the Senate and gets to the House, I have a suspicion we will see changes to that concept.
I was going
to
say, that seems highly unenforceable.
Yeah.
It is.
Most of
this is never going to happen, if not everything, when the bill dies. But this is just a continued exercise in absurdity. I would encourage people to take a pause and not react to any individual development here. Probably the true newsworthy item of the last 7 days is that Stanford players were organizing. We might have a step towards actual collective bargaining
soon.
That
was going to be my next. That was where I was going to go with that. The transition would be, if the bill dies, which I know Godfrey and I still think it will.
Yeah.
What's next? And one of the what's next is, I think there will be more consideration toward collective bargaining. And so, as Godfrey mentioned, the Stanford players, they formed the first on-campus chapter of the College Football Players Association. So that was a big announcement on Monday morning that they thought was going to carry the news cycle, and then the Michael Lombardi news dropped. But I want to take people back 11 years. I think it was 11 years. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2015 when Northwestern players did this. The reaction was far different. Like I have not seen Stanford say boo about this.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
They've stayed quite quiet.
Yeah. Northwestern, the school, came out very hard against and
noted union buster Pat Fitzgerald might have had something to do with that too.
If we go back in the history of it, like, the unionization effort at Northwestern was very haphazard, and
management stomped that shit out like a flaming bag of poop.
They did. Now, it is easier to do this at a private school.
Yep.
Private schools are subject to the National Labor Relations Board. They you can do this here. I don't think you can do this at a public school in this way. That's why I've said, if they ever do actually unionize and try to collectively bargain, everybody's probably gonna have to be an employee of the conference. It's probably too hard.
Well, and that's what they want, right? Andy, this is the College Football Players Association's model, is a conference employment model. And if you talk to a lot of people, a lot of athletic directors even, they'll tell you that's the model they've talked to their conferences about, is from the conference level, there being an employment and bargaining agreement. That's where it would come from. This was pretty fascinating. And I think it is a big deal, and it's going to be a bigger deal when you have 3 to 5 more schools come on board, or players at more schools come on board in the next month, because I think that will happen. And this is what college administrators have actually been hoping for, right? We've talked about it a lot about collective bargaining and how it would benefit actually the schools and conferences to collectively bargain with the athletes, but nobody really wants to sort of do it. A lot of people won't say it publicly. And one big hurdle in it is the players coming to the table. This is how the players start coming to the table, when they get together and say, hey, for the benefit of everybody, and some of the Stanford players said this on the record, we're not necessarily asking for more money. In the benefit of everybody to have rules, we want a stable environment. We are doing this. And we all know Stanford players are pretty effing smart, right? And these guys, like I interviewed, they blew me away. And they're like, look, we're not going to the NCAA saying we want more money. We're going to the NCAA saying, hey, we'd like some stability, and this seems like a route to do it. Can we this is mutually beneficial, so let's do it. What's funny about all this is it takes the players, 19 and 20-year-olds, to actually do that rather than the adults in the room that are trying to go to Congress.
Well, stealing my gimmick, yelling about stuff and being honest. God, fine.
Those particular players,
I'm going to go play Wordle,
stand to benefit more from this, because this is what people say. Well, why would the players want this? They're getting, quarterbacks are getting like $3 million, minimum as a starter. Like, yeah, that guy does really well.
Yes.
So the bulk of it will want something a little more firm in terms of protections and in terms of a salary floor and a salary. Like, they're more interested in the salary floor than the salary cap.
I have a not a better answer, because that's a good answer, Andy, but I would like to add something, because it is about to be August and I'm doing the preseason thing, looking for like the football part of the sport. Remember football, guys, right?
We're going to talk about it in a second.
I think a lot of players realize the insecurity of their position. And a lot of players, as I'm looking at some of these rosters, especially kind of in the range of like Pac-12, American, ACC, Big 12, a lot of players are getting pushed out. And a lot of players realize that they can kind of lose their position in a creative way, therefore, if there's a better player that magically becomes available in the transfer market. And maybe they don't want to leave that particular school that they're at, but they're going to get pushed to the side. So
yeah,
there's been this really myopic, cynical thing of like, well, the player, it's chaos now. That's what the players wanted. Like, no, we are looking at the edge cases of millionaire quarterbacks. Most guys are just like, yeah, I want to commit to this school. I want to play for 3 or 4 years. If I can make some money, great. And then I want to have some consistency. And I think that voice is going to get stronger as we go along these next couple seasons.
I'd agree with that. Here's the other piece of this. If we're being realistic about it, if there were a players union and there were any sort of negotiations, or there were not negotiations, it would take probably 1 week of the schools locking out the players.
Yeah.
And not paying them.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
get them to the table.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you did not zero yeah. games would get missed. Like you're about to watch a prolonged lockout in Major League Baseball next year. That'll happen.
Mm.
You wouldn't see that in college football. It might last a week.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing you guys mentioned there, Northwestern, and how they sort of came out so publicly, the administration and against it. Then you look at what happened at Penn State with the College Football Players Association 4 years ago, and how, you know, a strength coach, I think it was, caught the team meeting with the union folks, the association folks, and then put the kibosh sort of on everything. And now you see the difference and the acceptance more of this, because Stanford hasn't said anything, good or bad, about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, and Jason Stahl, the College Football Players Association executive director, met with the 50 members of the team. I think, I don't know if it was in the team room, but it was in the team facility, and he met a bunch of other players in individual meetings in the team facility. Stanford knew about this. The administration knew about this. Some of them, at least,
like the Northwestern situation.
I think this says a lot. I believe that Andrew Luck knew about this. Like, it says a lot that they sort of just kind of were like neutral on it and allowed it to happen, because I think everybody knows this is the way forward without some bill, even if they get a bill. This is the way forward.
If the bill passes and it's still possible for individual players to sue and say, you're illegally capping my earning potential, you still need a CBA. You still need something like that that would make you more lawsuit proof. So, yeah, it's interesting to see the difference between, like you guys mentioned, the Penn State thing just 4 years ago. The Northwestern thing 11 years ago. And Ross, you're absolutely right. Inside the industry, it has gone from, we'll never make them employees, we'll never, ever consider negotiating with them, to, please God, let us figure out how to negotiate with these guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is how it's supposed to happen. This is how it happens in American business. And this is going to be this may be the only real way out of this perpetual transition, whatever we're calling this era of college sports.
Yeah.
So it's a good
look. It's not easy either, by the way. I know this is what everybody says when I mention, oh, you need to collectively bargain. Well, but that's really hard. Yes. It's really hard.
Yeah.
Yes. It's not as hard as it living through this over and over again indefinitely.
Right. You know, there's going to be people, plenty of them, listening to this podcast and then calling me and yelling and screaming about how I didn't mention any of all the hurdles and all the issues that come with this.
Okay.
And I get it. There are a lot of them, right? I mean, there's got to be some kind of federal change potentially to the law to allow right-to-work states, public employees to collectively bargain. Like, you've got to have, again, you got to have the athletes come to the table. You got to have university presidents sort of come around to this big obstacle of like employing athletes and potentially locking them out. Like, I get all the issues and the benefits and what happens to scholarships. there are a lot of issues.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
But but aren't there more issues right now?
Yes. I would. Hey, when you get those calls, I want you to hit merge and then put my number in. Okay.
Because Godfrey,
it's supposed to be hard. That's the job. I'm so sick of college administrators whining. Do you know how hard that would be? Get off your ass and fix it. Because right now you're occupying a really sweet position, which is whining about the old days while letting this sport turn into chaos. Get off your ass and make a change.
Can I give an example of why I think they're probably down to deal with this stuff now? I think them passing the five to play five, knowing what lawsuits they were about to get hit with because of it, tells you that they now understand the concept of going through a brief bit of pain to get to something more orderly.
Yes, yeah. that's a very positive way of looking at it. I just think that maybe you're right that they found proof of concept for their side, so to speak, where it felt like anything that an organizational body did for a while was going to get smacked down in court. So maybe you're right, Andy. I just also think that the level of complacency here from the people who are whining the loudest has to stop. Like, go to the table. Try something.
The people who are whining the loudest, though, are the ones that are going to be gone by the time all this stuff happens. It's a generation that is aging out and phasing out.
I hope you're right. The people that are quiet,
the people that are not talking publicly, but behind the scenes, have a lot of ideas. Like, I'll tell you, the first time I ever heard someone mention the idea of the players, like the football players, just being employees of the conference, was from a guy who is a big-time school athletic director right now.
Okay.
But it was 7 years ago, before the NIL rules were even passed, before any of that. It was this person seeing around the corner, understanding this is coming. This would be the potential solution for it. This person is in a very high position now. Like, there are people like that who've been preparing for this. So I don't think it's just like the whiners are the loudest, but they're also the ones that are probably retiring early.
Maybe you're right. I know a lot of people in powerful positions who are sitting on their hands right now. And I'm just curious how fast that can be unseated, or do we have another 10 years of this? Naming names and
it's complicated. I
don't know that I've said it on the pod before. I was back at the combine in February. I was talking to some NFL guys, like general counsel types, and asking them how long do they think it would take for college football to like operate under a collective bargaining agreement. And I hate to bust some people's bubble who think it's going to happen in a couple of years, but it is a long process. And they were saying like 8, 10, 12 years. Start of the NIL era, you know.
Let's think it up right around 2034 when the SEC's TV contract runs out. And
I don't
know, there may be some sort of crazy movement afoot at that point. And
you could say the process started with the NIL era. So we're like 5 years in to that, to that 10 to 12, 15, you know, year process. So maybe we're a third of the way through.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be here for every step of it. When we come back, Big Ten Media Day starts. Questions we'd be asking the coaches. Plus, Ohio State will have a little extra on its uniform this year for a lot extra on the payroll. We'll talk about it when we come back. Welcome back to the College Football Inquirer. Today is the first day of Big Ten Media Days, and one Big Ten school dropping a bit of news, which it's interesting how we react to this, because I think it depends on how old you are, what sports you're also a fan of. But Ohio State on Tuesday morning dropping the news that they are going to have a jersey patch sponsorship with JPMorgan Chase. So basically a Chase Bank patch will be the logo, and it'll say Chase. And Godfrey didn't wear this shirt just because it's an approximation of Buckeye Scarlet.
No, don't take the credit. Take the credit. Yeah.
But if you just imagine a Chase logo on my shirt,
You planned ahead.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah. I think this looks pretty good, to be honest. But let's talk before we get into aesthetics, because there's a whole.
Can we talk money?
Yeah, there's a whole psychology around the aesthetics, and we'll get into that in a second. So it's $17 million a year.
That's what Pete Thamel reported. Okay. It's $17 million per year, which, I mean, that.
Here's why I'm
buy
smiling.
A hell of an offensive line.
Here's why I'm smiling. Two years ago, Ohio State won the national championship in this sport for a reported $20 million.
Correct.
So we talk about haves in this sport. We talk about have-nots. This is deeply hilarious to me because, by the way, the going rate for a national championship is not $20 million. In 2 years, I would say it's probably minimum $45 million right now.
Right.
But the idea
But the team that won it last year probably spent $22.5 last year.
Well, you know, look, man, Costco shoppers are smart people. And what is Kurt Cignetti if not a Costco shopper? The idea of the making back almost your entire budget for national championship roster 2 years ago off of one jersey patch, I think is a very representative of where we are as a sport today.
Yes. But it's also where Ohio State is in the universe. Yeah, Ohio absolutely. State can command the highest price.
Yeah.
I will be shocked if someone beats this.
Correct.
Maybe Georgia, if they got Delta or Coca-Cola, could beat this. But I would be shocked if anybody beats this.
I would argue that Ohio State is often maybe neck and neck with Notre Dame, if not Texas, for probably the biggest single brand in the sport. Okay, so financially, this makes sense, all the sense in the world, because all you're doing is adding a patch on a jersey, and you're making a tremendous amount of money to continue to push one of the biggest and most successful brands in the sport. This is a no-brainer at Ohio State for Ross Bjork and company. Let's move to aesthetics for a second, because I think this is also
Can I add one more thing? Because I noticed people dunking on the Big 12 today.
Why?
Because they did the Monster sponsorship.
Yes.
Where each school is going to get $1.5 million a year from Monster. I don't think people have actually paid attention to how that works. It doesn't mean they can't sell their jersey patch.
Right.
The Monster logo is incorporated into the Big 12 logo.
Yes.
Like BYU's already sold its jersey patch to Entrada. Mm-hmm. And I believe several of the other Big 12 schools have sold jersey patches already. So this does not preclude, the Monster deal does not preclude them from doing this. Will they make what Ohio State makes? No, because they're not Ohio State.
It's the layer cake, kids. This is what we talk about all the time. The Monster thing didn't bother me. This doesn't bother me. I want to talk about aesthetics for a second because I actually think it's going to come back around on revenue. Stay with me on this.
Sure.
I think the Chase logo, it's inoffensive in terms of the palette for Ohio State. It doesn't really affect the scarlet or gray because the one that I'm looking at in the Thamel tweet, which looks like an official PR photo, is a white logo on top of the red. And then I'm sure that will flip when they wear white jerseys.
Right.
There'll be some differentiation.
And the white matches the jersey number fabric perfectly. So
the one that kind of jumped out at me, and I think I'm somewhere directly in the middle of the generational reception to these sponsors on patches and all this kind of stuff. The one that jumped out to me recently was Culver's on Wisconsin because Culver's logo is a sort of maybe a cyan blue on a famously almost monochromatic, but what duocrat? I don't know what the word is for that.
Yeah, Culver's is blue and white. I mean, those are their
colors. And Wisconsin
colors.
Is always red and white. They have two colors and that's it. So the idea of sort of an opposite color in the Pantone wheel sitting on a Wisconsin jersey, it's really, really, really noticeable. Generationally, people really get in their feelings on the older side of this issue. Like I have heard my parents personally and my family complain about the Quick Creep patch on the Braves jersey for the last 2 years. I don't care. My response is put it on the front on top of the Braves logo if it helps them win a World Series. I think most younger fans care about this. And then Andy, let's get down and talk about our kids' generation for a second. My kid, when he was looking for the latest Barcelona jersey, was seeking out the new Spotify logo. It had to have, like, he wanted a Yamal jersey or kit, sorry. And he specifically wanted the Spotify logo.
The kit's the whole uniform, the shirt's the jersey.
Is it? Okay. See, look, you know what I am? I'm old. What can I do? The point is, this is going to have the reverse effect that I think a lot of the stodgier older generation feels. Kids are going to seek out this jersey. They're going to want that patch. That's what we see in soccer fandom is that people actually seek out kits with specific logos from corporate sponsors. I think this is actually going to be...
Yeah, and soccer is different. Like they've been... We talk about this all the time with promotion and relegation. They're conditioned to accept it and embrace it.
Yeah.
American sports fans are not. But they're also conditioned to accept these giant... Like the soccer jersey, the team crest is tiny.
Yes.
And the advertisement is huge.
I don't know about you, but I have a hard time recognizing famous soccer clubs by their crest. What right. I have always associated is the corporate sponsor that's on their chest for, you know, a couple years at least. That's how I, like, as a non-affiliated person, Real Madrid, it was just like, well, it was kind of a white jersey and, you know, it had a corporate sponsor on it. But kids, younger Americans, are more accustomed to that than we are. I think the addition and modification of a jersey in any way, shape, or form only adds to the inventory value of selling this as merchandise. I think it's a good thing.
It's which I'm shocked to hear you say that, because that's like the very cynical way I would look at it normally. But this is more similar to the NBA, where
with a smaller patch.
That in some cases incorporates with the team colors and in some cases doesn't. But it's funny because I've learned about different companies through that. Like the Lakers had a Korean frozen food brand last year. This year they're going to have a personal financial digital assistant. My favorite, of course, is the Oklahoma City Thunder, because I am a big fan of Love's Travel Centers.
But talk about
Love's OKC based company.
Dude, the glaring, I noticed the Love's patch on the Thunder jersey, because how can you not? I'm actually
and the Knicks is like Visit Abu Dhabi, or was last year.
Am I
Which
crazy?
Doesn't really make me want to visit Abu Dhabi.
No, am I crazy? I as an Atlanta Hawks fan, what did they have? Oh, they had something called, I think it's online healthcare, share care. I think that's what it was last season. I don't know. Some of these I remember, some of these I don't, which I kind of think is also the point, which is that once toe meets leather, I don't think people are really going to care about the Chase jersey, or the Chase logo on the jersey for Ohio State. They're going to care whether or not they beat Texas. I think it's that simple.
Yeah, 100%. So
if I am trying to win national championships, and if I am Ryan Day and Ross Bjork and the various people that are trying to win another Ohio State national championship, this is as much of a layup as possible in terms of finding available cash. Not that Ohio State needs money, but this is also what separates you from even the other halves. I have no problem with this. I think kids are probably going to like it. I know a lot of people, traditionalists, are probably clutching their pearls right now. I just think it's kind of a non-issue.
Yeah. Bigger issue, something everybody has an opinion about.
What's that?
So Cleveland.com does a preseason Big Ten poll. Also, our friends Bill Landis and Doug LaMaurice do their own Big Ten preseason poll. And I found very interesting that Ohio State picked first in both of those. Which, look, Ohio State has been the most consistent program in college football, probably throughout college football history.
Okay.
But I don't know. I probably would have gone Oregon this year based on what everybody brings back. But I can certainly entertain Ohio State as a potential number one. But I'm fascinated by that. And then where does Indiana fall? They kind of fell number three in both. And then right around the cut line of, we think, you know, between four and five is probably the CFP cut line. That's where the two polls differed. One had Michigan number four and USC five, and one had USC four and Michigan five. And that's
interesting.
Make all the difference. Yeah.
That is kind of what I would focus on. I feel like Ohio State with a returning quarterback is kind of a default mode setting for Big Ten writers. That doesn't surprise me or shock me at all. It's not that different than the way we used to do it in the SEC, in SEC country. We're just assuming that someone like an Alabama or a Georgia or an Urban Meyer, Florida, with Julian Sain coming back and the level of the baseline for Ohio State, that doesn't shock me too much. I know Oregon fans will get mad, but these are sports writers. They're not scientists. I'm way more interested in that cut line, because you want to talk about affecting fates, Andy. You want to talk about seismic impact. The idea of first-year Michigan head coach Kyle Whittingham nudging out Lincoln Riley's USC from playoff contention, massive reverberation.
Well, and also, if we know our history.
Yes, sir.
Lincoln Riley's first year at USC, the Caleb Williams Heisman year. Who beat them twice?
Mm-hmm.
Who kept them out of the playoff?
Yeah.
Well, that would be one Kyle Whittingham and Utah Utes.
It's a good point, sir. Yeah, this is if we assume that is the cut line, maybe they both make it in. You know,
they don't
you never
play
know.
This year, by the way, unless they somehow meet in the Big Ten championship game in the playoff.
I had a question on my other show on Single Wing about what would you do? What one? I'm going to run this by you, actually. Go to phantomisland.show, subscribe to my other show. Someone asked me, what would you do that's your Mark-esque, Brett, your Mark-esque to the ACC?
And this kind of mark.
So this kind of jogged my memory, Andy. What I said was I would create a line in the schedule like the last 3 weeks, and I would basically turn into kind of a pro wrestling booker. And what I said was like, whatever needs to happen in the schedule that hasn't happened organically because of how unruly the ACC is, I would just make it happen. So here's the edge case. I said, like, all right, let's say Miami's undefeated, but you want to get a second team in if you're the ACC, right? So if let's say Clemson and SMU or SMU and somebody, whatever, if they're not playing, you make them play. So the winner could then go to the ACC championship, but then also have a resume as a wild card. This, what you just said, kind of jogged my memory because the Big Ten would benefit from this as well, where you somehow create a scheduling window open, if only to create the matchup that didn't organically occur in the schedule.
The Big Ten had this idea, by the way, during the pandemic season.
Yeah.
They tried it. They didn't actually get to pull it off for the most part. They played a couple of the games and then some teams got COVID and they couldn't play them. But it was a great idea. It was awesome.
Yeah. I think that's the sort of crazy your mark idea that I would do if I was in charge of any of these leagues, especially where you're dealing anything plus 16 in membership. You're going to run into a chance of, oh, man, those teams really needed to play each other to suss this out or to help a resume. Look, COVID broke my brain when it came to scheduling, Andy, because in a matter of how many hours, Andy, did BYU and Coastal Carolina get on the phone and say, hey, you want to come over this weekend?
And the BYU truck drivers are like, let's roll.
Let's go, baby. We're bored. We got nothing to do. The roads are empty. It's COVID. And guess what? They played a football game and it was important and impactful for both teams. So you don't need 7 years to advance a football game.
Hey, Godfrey, before we go, I want to talk about one more thing. Mm. This is something that we saw on the internet on Monday and you and I were going back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
Texas A&M is introducing, I believe they're called Aggieland Suites. Uh-huh. So these are game day suites or game weekend suites that are actually a bit away from Kyle Field. They're not walking distance to Kyle Field. They're several miles away from Kyle Field. And it looks to me like essentially a student apartment complex for rich people that is only available 7 weekends a year.
Yeah.
And it's probably ungodly expensive. And I hope to someday be rich enough to afford something like this or to be able to spend my money on something like that is this frivolous and not care.
Half of our audience is, or not half, but a significant portion of our audience is on audio. So I need to this looks like a rich boomer's idea of the coolest student apartment possible is the best way to describe it. But I want to reemphasize what Andy said. This is not a game day suite. It is not connected to Kyle Field. It is away from Kyle Field. So this has nothing to do with your tickets to Kyle Field.
Yeah, but you spend, I would assume they open on Friday afternoon. And I need this cleared up. Because if you can occupy these year round,
that's different.
Then I might actually do this.
Yes.
Like I'd be down for this.
Go ahead.
If it's only it opens Friday afternoon of game weekend, and then you're out of there Sunday morning, and then they lock it back up.
Yeah,
I don't know. What are we doing for that?
What are we doing here? Okay, friend of the program, Bunky Perkins, retweeted this. This is how I found this. Retweeted it and said, "Oil at $83." Other people responded to his thread, and I think they're all actually Aggies fans, saying oil needs to be at $90 if you're going to pay $562,000 for a game room that you only use 7 to 8 times a year for 3 to 4 hours at a time. I don't know if, and also apparently you're not even, they don't come furnished. You're just buying space.
That. Yeah. And you can pay for a concierge that'll stock it for you.
Right.
Like there's a whole lot of ancillary services that are available.
I gotta be like, even for the Aggies, this feels a bit excessive.
What I would do is buy the sickest condo within walking distance of Kyle Field and then do all this. But here's the thing, and this is what I was thinking about this morning.
All right.
All of these people that are the target market for this already own that condo.
Ah. Okay, but would they upgrade because just that sort of Texas mentality of like, you know, keeping up with the Joneses?
Well, it's not upgrade, it's just in addition to, because
I need to know if you can live in this thing. I'm serious because the
right.
Like
if you can live by the way, if you can live in it, it will devolve into hub
Dirtbag Central
of high income debauchery.
Dirtbag Central.
Like the children of the mega wealthy in Texas.
Uh-huh.
All of the bad things they do. Think of every episode of Euphoria you've seen just add lots of zeros to dad's paycheck and mom's paycheck. That's what it will be.
Just a petri dish of Johnny Manziel. I have a lot of questions. Because look, my alma mater, Andy, was, I don't know if it's nationally famous as it should be, the entire economy of Oxford, Mississippi changed when the game day condo concept was introduced. It actually, like, I think it multiplied by 5X.
Property values in Oxford are insane right
they're,
now.
Insane. Oh, I mean, they're, yeah. The like, literal crack shack that I rented my junior year was knocked over 2 years ago, and $1 million condo was put on it. And you could walk to the square from there. And when I lived there, we were actually, like, killing rats with a stick. This is kind of the final evolution of that, I guess, but only if you can live in it. This becomes totally understandable to me, and you're exactly right. It will be trust fund kids galore if you can live in it. But if it's just like a thing they unlock for you, this may be the dumbest and flashiest game day brag I've ever seen. And also, again, it's not that close to the stadium.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to get on the party bus to get to Kyle Field. You can't walk there.
I mean, the whole point, and like maybe this is a little bit of my alumni thing showing, but also like, you know, I've been to Georgia, I've been to Alabama, a thousand other schools. The fun of the tailgate is that it is in the shadow of the stadium and you have, you know, your little tent city and like this, I don't know, I kind of feel like it takes away from the spirit of the thing.
But the thing is also if you're mega rich and you want to really enjoy it and you want to have a badass
yeah.
pregame experience, like yeah. you buy the $1.5 million condo. That gives yeah. you 3,000 square feet right across the street from the stadium with a view.
I would just,
and you have that year round, and you will sell it for way more than you paid for it if you keep it for a while.
That and that really is what happened, especially in places like Oxford and Tuscaloosa, was it turned into a flipper's market depending on how good the football team was.
Yeah, yeah. The people would buy it and then they'd say, well, I'm going to have this for game days, but also when my kid goes to school there, they're going to live there.
And then I'm going to sell it when my kid graduates and I'm going to make 2X or 3X. But I mean, if the football team is bad.
My friend's dad did that when he went to medical school in Gainesville. Now, this was not a game day thing. This was just he bought a condo relatively inexpensively. And 4 years later, when his son becomes a doctor, he's made like 80 grand on the condo.
There was a report that floated around, like an unofficial kind of economic impact report at the end of the Matt Luke era in Oxford, about how much condo values and sort of like the resale market had dipped because Ole Miss was underperforming. It was one of the reasons they went out and got Lane Kiffin back then. I would defer to the Aggies on this because I don't know it. Look, to use
yeah, I need more specifics.
This is a vibes-based decision. If you're richer than 4 foot up a bull's ass, which most of these people are, is this something that feels a little too gaudy, or is it just right for Aggies? Please, all of the UT people listening, I don't need your opinion on this. I am curious what actual Aggies think about this.
Yes, we know you have high-rise condos in downtown Austin that are probably closer to DKR than these are to Kyle Field.
I don't know. I'm conflicted at the same. It's like spend your money, man. It's a free, you know, it's a free world and a free market. But this just feels, even for the Ags, this feels like a bit much.
Which is saying something.
I know. We found the threshold. We found the ceiling.
But again, I've never opened my bank account and seen 7 zeros.
No, I've never had to worry. Yeah.
I don't know that. Like, yeah. Maybe I'm just wrong. Maybe if I had that kind of dough, that's where I'd go with it.
I just feel like I'd find a more fun way to blow this kind of money. I feel confident in my abilities.
But again, if that's year round, if you can live in it year round, that might be the most fun way to blow this kind of money.
Yes. Also, adding a wrinkle, what if it's just some like mid 40s guy, like, you know, about our age, who's just like, I'm moving back. I don't care. I'm rich.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be that guy. I'm going to creep out at the local bars and like,
If you watch the video on the internet advertising this thing, I just want I want you to stay till the end. It's like a 40-second video. It won't take much of your time. It's all AI generated. The best part is the end, where there is a little dog park,
yes,
kind of off to the side of it.
I saw
and there are two or three Reveille's,
yeah,
frolicking in the dog park.
I don't want to alarm anybody, but I think A&M might be cloning Reveille. Is basically that's what I'm gleaning from this, is that we might have some sort of Reveille cloning program, and or there have always been multiple Reveille's and we just didn't know it.
Yeah, no. Hey, look. If she walks into your class, class is over. Man, one of the great traditions.
I could have used that in college.
Definitely. Oh, wait, I didn't go to class, so I wouldn't have known.
Correct.
We will be back Thursday. There'll be a lot of action at Big Ten Media Days. We'll have a Tony Petitti State of the Union address that's always very interesting. And who knows? Maybe more action on Capitol Hill. Don't sigh, Godfrey. You know you love it. We'll talk to you Thursday.